You are listening to WDOT Radio. The program you're listening to may contain language or material that could be considered offensive. The views expressed are those of the DJ and not necessarily those of WDOT or other WDOT station members. We therefore advise you to carefully consider whether you or your children should listen. Hi, Schreiber. I hope you all had an amazing weekend. Today I will be starting a new series of interviews with the one and only Danny Massa, as seen on season 44 of CBS's Survivor. I hope you all enjoy. Danny, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hey, what's going on? Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat it up.
Of course. Could you tell me a little about yourself?
I'm born and raised in the Bronx, New York. I am a firefighter, also in the Bronx, New York. I am a certified Wim Hof method instructor and a breathing coach. And I have a beautiful family, wife, two kids, and a pretty fortunate human being.
Yeah, so when I was researching you, I came to find that you're sort of like a jack of all trades. You're a firefighter, I believe boxer, certified breath coach, Wim Hof certified instructor, and seems obviously a family man, and a contestant on Survivor. I'd first like to ask, how did you get into all these professions?
I got really lucky. My parents were awesome, and just there was never kind of any limitations for what I could or couldn't do, or I was never like super gifted really at anything, but kind of had the superpower of just having a really good mom and dad who told me, like, you know, whenever you're interested in something, just go throw a work at it, go get reps in, and you can get good at it. You can get sufficient.
Did these traits help you while you were on Survivor?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it definitely did. And just, it gave me like perspective and, even like going into the challenges, like I've never been, even though I may look, especially like I'm a Survivor, I may look like I'm like, you know, relatively athletic person, but growing up, I was like chubby and, pretty insecure. So, I was never really naturally phenomenal in anything. So when it came to like the challenges, like every time if I fail at it, it's just like, okay, I'm going to get better. Like at each time I do a challenge, I'm going to get better at it. And I still feel that way now. Like if I was able to get on another season and do it, like I'm the kind of person is I'm not naturally really good at really anything particularly. But if you give me enough time to work on it, I can get better because I'm pretty dumb or resilient, one of the two, whatever you want to call it.
Now I can relate to that a lot since I personally play trumpet. So when I pick up a piece, I'm not actually quite good at it at the beginning, and I wouldn't say I'm quite good at the piece at the start. But when I practice it after a while and set my mind to it, it really helps me to learn it better.
Whoa, that's so cool! The trumpet is like. When I see people playing that, it blows my mind. Like, it seems like simple to like the like, you know, ignorant person, but like then I'm somebody who's talking me through it. Trumpet, like, it was like such an intricate instrument. That is so cool. Mm-hmm.
So circling back, how long have you been a fan of Survivor? You're talking about you as a child growing up earlier. Were you a fan of Survivor growing up? Did you watch from the beginning?
No, I wasn't. My sister and my sister's kids got me into Survivor. They would all watch it together, and it's actually a pretty powerful story. So my sister is a widow. She lost her husband to a sarcoma cancer. When they first started their family, they adopted two children from Haiti and had one biological kid, and he got a really horrible sense of a type of cancer. Killed them pretty quickly, and that was their favorite reality show, Survivor. It was too painful for my sister to watch it after he passed until the kids got older, and just organically they loved the show. So it was kind of like full circle. She watched it with them, and then one day they call me Unky. They're like, Unky, you gotta watch this show with us. And she told me, she's like, this was Joe's favorite. Joe is my brother-in-law who passed away. This was Joe's favorite reality show. He used to love this. Like, they watched the first season, watched Richard win. So that's how I got into it. I started watching with them. And then my niece, she actually just graduated college last year. She was, 8 or 9 at the time, was like, Unky, you got to get on the show. And she's like really smart and like, you know, good with computers and stuff. And she, I'm like, fill me out the application. And she did. So after years of watching it, and kind of forgetting about that and thinking, like, there's no way they're actually gonna call me. They called me and, we did my video and, she helped edit it. And, yeah, so it's all thanks to my, my niece and my sister that, I got on the show. And it was like, cool, 'cause it's one of the most amazing adventures in my life.
Well, I'd first like to say I'm so sorry for your family's loss. And the casting process for Survivor, was it difficult?
Oh, my God. It is wildly, it's intense, yeah. It's the vetting, you know, they do a really great job at making sure that you're not like, what's the like, can I use language like on this? They want to make sure you're not like a D-bag, let's say that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so they do like a pretty extensive psychological test and make sure you're not going to, you know, be an a-hole out there or, you know, say anything really, you know, horrible or do anything horrible. And they do a really good job. They do like an hour, like hours of psychological kind of examination to make sure you're not a risk. And to make sure you're a good fit for the show, you're fun, you like to, you know, tell your story, you're not going to go and clam up. So, yeah, it was very extensive.
So in the past, when there were some more controversial characters on the show, was that just would you say it's an act or is that actually their personality?
I think it's a combination. I think it's a combination of, you know, back in the day, I don't think you had some bad guys. Survivor seems to have walked away or moved away from having actually real villains as opposed to, you know, they have more gamesmanship, you know, her name's escaping me. Beautiful black woman. She was excellent. She was friends with Ricard. I don't know why it's escaping me. But you know, like she was a good person, but you know, that was kind of like the new villain. The new villain was not really a villain, but someone who just played kind of cutthroat. And, that's what I think they moved towards. And I think that's really good for the show. 'Cause you know, who wants like an actual bad person? You want to, you know, so I think that's really when they shifted that. But in the first years of Survivor, obviously growing process, and they had some people that were, you know.
After your season on Survivor, did anybody reach out to you from the show, like in the past, from past seasons?
You know, I became really tight with Bryce and Wendell. Just from the Bryce and Wendell Presents shows, those are like incredible events, and that's pretty much for Bryce and Wendell. I got to really experience everybody. I got to meet Mike Turner and a bunch of people from the newer seasons, and who else? I got to hang with a lot of people. Just through the grapevine, everybody's been like really lovely.
Oh, nice. So, when you first got told that you were going to be on Survivor, how did you and your family react?
Oh, it was intense. My daughter, I have two kids now. At the time, I just had my daughter. And, we freaked out. We were, like, absolutely, like, you know, over the moon, excited. My wife's, like, the most amazing person ever. She's, like, just someone who wants everyone she loves to live the most fulfilling life you possibly can. So I went away for well over a month and I left her with my 3-month-old daughter. So it's a double-edged sword. It was very difficult to leave and be away from my family. And very, I was very appreciative that like my wife is such a person that like, you know, was like, hey, go live this dream. I'll hold it down at home. Like, don't worry about a thing. So, it was very, you know, it was amazing.
So you're on the boat to go to the first challenge, right? What was it like first seeing Jeff Probst?
Oh man, Jeff, it is just how you think it would be. And you know, like they say, like don't meet your heroes because you often get let down. Jeff's one of the rare exceptions. You meet him and you're like, whoa, Jeff Probst is even cooler in person. I mean that too. Like I wouldn't if he was not cool, I just wouldn't say anything. He's exceptionally cool. He comes over and talks to you like in between challenges, and he is that dude. Like, he is really passionate about the show. He's really passionate about human beings. He's really passionate about human interactions. And he's a ball buster. Like, that's why he loves, like, Jam Jam so much. And if you, like, flatter him, he'll kind of avoid you. But if you make fun of him, he'll gravitate towards you. Because, you know, he likes to joke and have fun. So it was really cool to meet Jeff. It was a really cool experience.
Do you still talk to him ever? Is he in contact with you?
He'll come, and he did, like, a FaceTime with all of us after. And, you know, he said he's, you know, wants to make an effort to kind of stay connected with all the contestants more. But, you know, there's 44, you know, sometimes 44, there's 46 seasons. So, you know, you can't expect him to kind of keep up with all of us. So, not like particularly on an individual basis or anything, but, you know, checks in with us. And, you know, you can't expect him to, like, remember and talk to everybody. But, yeah, he's touched base a couple times.
So you were talking about the challenges. What was more difficult on the show? The brutal challenges you competed in, or just the basic survival needs such as food and water, like getting those?
You know, I think one highlights the other. So, like, the challenges wouldn't be that hard if you were, I think you look at the show, like, I love the challenge so much. And I, like, you know, that's where I think, like, the challenges are more like the difficult point where you're going to actually really get the resistance, because you're eating, you know, you're in a comfortable house. But now if you mix in having to survive, you're sleep deprived. Sleep deprivation was the hardest thing for me. I knew we weren't going to eat. And, you know, I told you before, my niece grew up in Haiti. So she literally ate dirt sandwiches to avoid hunger pains. So it was very, it was a huge advantage for me to know my niece and know how strong of a person she is and what she went through in Haiti and dealt with real hunger. So, you know, new survivors, 26 days. So I came in very prepared and focusing and dwelling on, like, the energy, and I channeled a lot of energy and motivation from her, that the hunger really, I never let get to me, because I knew that we're playing a game, and I feel like it would be doing a disservice to, like, people who actually, fight starvation. I actually looked at it as a beautiful opportunity to kind of connect with, with people who actually do suffer from not having food, as opposed to just being on a game. So that perspective really was an advantage, I think, to me, that I never really let the hunger, or anything like that, or survival get to me, because I knew it was a game, and it was, you know, fortunate to play this game and not actually have to live life in a way where I don't know where my next meal is going to be.
So whenever you won a challenge or something like that, did it mean that much more to you when you're thinking about your niece?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, my niece, my two nieces, my nephews, my sister had another kid after, who also I'm very close with, after her marriage. So it was cool to know and, just try to, you know, put on a performance, because I knew that they would really didn't care about, if I won or lost, as opposed to, like, you know, did I leave it all out there? And, that's what I looked at it, every challenge. Like, I'm going to make my family proud, my daughter proud. And, my niece and my nephews.
Well, you definitely did leave it out there. I was watching the show and was so amazed to see you figured out how to open the birdcage, I believe, with the immunity idol in it.
Yeah, that was so cool. I couldn't even, that was a surreal experience.
In that moment, how did you feel?
Oh, man, I felt like I was living in a dream. I felt like, this can't be real. Like, I'm going to wake up on the beach and be like, wow, that was a cool dream. I found the key. I opened it up. I actually got the idol. It was two things. It was surreal. It was euphoric. And then right after the euphoria settled down, it became, you know, a little bit anxiety, inducing, because now you have this pressure of, you know, a lot of people get idols. Not a lot of people play idols well. A lot of people, more idols are misused than actual. You've seen it on my season. I'm trying to think. I believe there was only one successful idol play, and it was mine. So that was the pressure of like being like, okay, I got the idol now. How do I make
what
sure
do you do
that?
With it?
Yeah, because you know, an idol means nothing if you don't know what's going on. It really does. If you put the idol in the wrong spot, you play it. Now it makes it way more likely that you're a failed idol play at the end of tribal council is like. It's a damning course of events. Like you want to make sure you play that right. So, that was the pressure of having the idol. You know, it's not just getting it. You have it. All right. Well, you misuse it. Now people are going to knock your gameplay. And if you knock your gameplay, you're way less likely to get votes at Final Tribal.
Well, I can only imagine since the social aspect of Survivor is very hard. But when you got the immunity idol, did it seem that the social aspect became a little bit harder because you had to hide it from your fellow competitors?
It is, dude, they can't capture, and through no fault of Survivor's editing, they just can't capture the true paranoia that happens within that birdcage. It was such a great idea. It was such a great, implementation. I think I'm using that word right. Mm-hmm. They implemented that birdcage. It's so cool. Like, think about just every, we're just constantly thinking about it. That's actually Brandon, they didn't really highlight this as much just because, you know, they filmed with 24 hours. Brandon figured out every single vote. While Brandon was in, he figured out every single vote from every single, even outside of his tribe. And so he also figured out, he narrowed down that the idol was either held by me or Matt. And that's why I targeted Brandon, because he was so smart and so... was so in tune with every single vote, and he had such good like tribe connections, and he was a challenge beast as well as that, probably only second to Franny, and the paranoia was absolutely insane. People were going through people's bags, people were going through people's everything, and just constantly keeping that idol in the pants that you have. And switching them out from, you know, from your other pants and, you know, keeping it hidden. And, that's why, you know, using the birdcage and having to plant the fake idol, was so, imperative to try to shake people off my tail.
Yeah, definitely. So, this wouldn't really be a Survivor interview if I didn't really ask you some of the more, I guess, more controversial questions within the realm of Survivor. So I just have a few of them for you. So one, you're talking about how they were filming you 24/7 on the show. Did you ever feel like you had to like do your hair correctly, or did you ever have makeup or perfectly every day because you were always on camera?
No, they let you fall apart. You have contact lenses, bug spray, and suntan lotion, and one electrolyte packet a day. They don't speak to you. They don't give you anything. They don't adjust anything. They might tell you, hey, it looks better if you sit like this on this rock. But you can tell them, no, I'm going to sit like this. And they say, okay. They don't change anything. They don't fix your hair. They do absolutely nothing to help you aesthetically whatsoever.
What about the clothing? Do you only have that one pair of clothing that you walk into on the first day?
You have two shirts. Your bag, you see, like, you know, we have our bags that has a long sleeve shirt, a short sleeve shirt, two short sleeve shirts, and two pairs of shorts, one pair of long pants.
How do you wash them? Or do you guys just like smell 24/7?
I think, you know, like smells are something that you don't recognize smell. You recognize change in smells. So, we probably were pretty dank, but it's something that you don't really pay too much attention to because as it gradually happens to you, you know, everybody around you, it just becomes the normal smell, I think. But I would assume that we smell pretty gnarly.
When you guys had those interviews, did it happen like after the show was taped, or did they just take you aside for a few minutes and say, hey, let me ask you this?
No. As the show is taped, they call them walks, and they're very diligent about using the walks. Like everybody has walks, and the walks are the interviews. Hey, it's time for a walk, and the walks happen randomly, always, so that you can't. Let's say something big happens where I found an idol. They want to interview me about that. Just because they come to grab me an interview doesn't necessarily mean anything dramatic happened. It just means that it's my turn for the interview. So they interview on the spot, and they interview everybody randomly, and they do a really great job at not giving anything away, not giving any clues to, something must be going on with Jamie because interviewing Ireland. It's like, no, they always interview everybody. So you can't use that as a strategy to figure out like, you know, different gameplay aspects.
Mm-hmm. And when they were recording you, even when you were finding the bird, when you opened the birdcage, is it someone like hiding behind a bush? Is it like a hidden camera? How did the cameras work?
So, no, they do. And when I went to the birdcage, I actually had a conversation with the camera people, being that where our birdcage was placed, there was about waist high grass, and you can see this in when I went to it. They were following me, and I'm crawling, and they're standing up, and I stopped. I turned around, and I said, "You guys got to get out of here. You're a crawl. You guys can't follow me the way you're following me." I go, my tribe can see, and they're like, and they're very good with this. The camera people are like so amazing. They're like superstars. So when I said that, they said, "All right." They're like, "You're going to the cage right now?" I go, "Yeah." They're like, "All right, we'll send people there." So they followed me just for a little bit without blowing my cover. And then they had it set up where they were over by the birdcage so that they wouldn't blow my cover.
So the competition of the show seems like it's like actually real. And my just follow-up question to that statement was, is any aspect of the show like scripted in any way? Do they push drama?
No, absolutely not. They don't push anything. They don't speak to you. They interview you. They don't manipulate or change anything. It the show is real as it gets. They just let it unfold. I mean, the big part is you're familiar with the Ponderosa?
Yes.
So the Ponderosa, before gameplay, they don't let you speak to anybody. They it's called lockdown, and they're very diligent. They have handlers, and they watch you, and they make sure that there's no interaction. That's one of the reasons why the show is so amazing, because you guys see everything. The viewers see everything. You do not. There is no conversations amongst your tribe mates that the viewers don't get to see, which naturally, because let's say me and Jane Doe are adversaries in strategy, but then let's say we had a conversation off camera, and now we're working, or allies, it wouldn't make sense to the show. So they're very diligent about making sure that you don't speak to anybody and have strategy that, like, wait, Danny and Jamie were adversaries. Now they're working together. When did that happen? So they make sure that you never speak that isn't on camera. It's called lockdown. Hey, lockdown, lockdown. And they're very sure to make sure you know, hey, if you mess up the sanctity of the show, the authenticness of the show, there'll be repercussions, you're replaceable, which is really important. And when you see the passion that the camera people and all the producers have for the show and trying to make sure it stays authentic, you get very connected to it, because you don't want to mess up something that people work so hard to maintain. So yeah. Everybody is kind of playing along with that.
So one of the most heated parts of Survivor, in my opinion, is when the voting, at when people get voted out. And I always see that whenever someone gets kicked off, they go down a path. They have one of those interviews that we were talking about before, and then we don't see anything from them until like a little bit later. Where do you guys actually go when you get kicked off, and then when you come back for the tribal ceremonies later in the season?
So it's the Ponderosa. You go to the Ponderosa, and it's amazing food there, incredible staff, and you are isolated at the Ponderosa with exclusively the other members who were voted out, and the staff and your producers. You hang out there. There's drinks, there's food. You can't drink before tribals. I still did, but you're not supposed to. They keep at the Ponderosa, and it's honestly a blast. That's where Brandon caught him. That's where me and him got like super tight. He's like one of my best friends. He comes and visits me all the time. Everybody, it was cool to hang out. Everybody, got to hang out with Franny more, and it's really cool to go. You're playing poker with real life emotions on the show. So on the Ponderosa, Kane Fritzer, dude, I love Kane so much. He's like incredible. I get to hang out with everybody, and then you're waiting, after the tribal, you see who gets voted out, and you're waiting for them to join you. And they join you. You get to see them eat their first meal. And the Ponderosa is probably one of the coolest parts of the entire show, even though you don't want to get voted out. You know, the music sucks, but getting to hang out with everybody and actually form real, you know, connections that aren't changed or manipulated by gameplay. You know, you're actually now bonding with these people outside of trying to win. You're trying to really connect. And yeah, I wish they did more footage of it, because I think it'd be like really something that people would love to see.
Is that where Jeff is?
No, Jeff's not there. Jeff's probably somewhere really nice. Ponderosa is cool, but it's not like, you know, some high end. It's a very beautiful, humble resort, I would say. But it's stunning, great food, very clean, but humble. Humble, I'm sorry about that. Okay. It's, you know, not like a 5-star resort or anything. Mm.
So when the cameras are on the island, I'm just personally wondering, is there like a building that they do like where they edit videos, or like where they all meet for to share footage, or do they leave the island when they do that?
They leave the island. They have a whole island of the workers. It's called Base Camp. And all the workers and all the producers, all the editors, they don't edit the show until after, I believe. But yeah, they have Base Camp, so they all, and that's where, like, you have different crews of camera crews. They're switching out throughout the day. You have one cameraman at night, and they're switching throughout.
So after you left the show, was it hard to shift back from your survivor lifestyle to your normal lifestyle?
No, it was actually really, for me, I just appreciated life way more. The entire experience has made life way more beautiful to me. I was shutting off, being away from technology, away from my phone, away from things. I used to bartend. I loved bartending for different reasons, but it wasn't like fulfilling my passions. And even though I used to make good money like bartending, when I was out there, I knew, like, I'm never going to bartend again. I don't want to spend that time away from my family and away from things I'm, like, truly passionate about. So it was perspective changing for me getting back. I couldn't wait to get back to my family, and, you know, having kids is definitely, makes it a lot easier too. And I'm older too. Like, I'm, you know, people in their 20s, or people maybe like, who've gone through, like, you know, harder traumas that in survivor maybe, scratch the calluses off of, made very vulnerable. They had harder times, but, you know, I had kids, and you're just dying to get back to your kids. So any kind of difficulty of returning back to the world is overturned or drowned out by the fact that, hey, you're back with your children now. Like, you know, it's kind of speeds up that process of reacclimating.
So the big question here is, would you go back on to Survivor again, or go on to a similar game show again?
Yeah, I've been trying to talk shit to all the people on the challenge. I feel like I would smoke them in the challenge, and they're doing returning season for season 50. I'm all about that. I haven't heard anything. I don't know anything about who they're trying to put on, but yeah, 100%. And I think if I got another chance to show between the experience, just like, you know, it would be like, the difference between you playing the trumpet your first time and how you are now, I feel like I come back and play that trumpet of Survivor way better this time. I think I would be a dark horse in taking it.
Would that put a target on your back, though, coming back?
Everybody's got a target on your back, you know, like, it's what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to, you know, how are you going to navigate those waters? I don't think so. I came in seventh place, so I think that the targets would be a lot. I don't think I'd be high on the list. You know, you look at like the Carsons and the Frannies and you know, challenge beasts, which I wouldn't call myself a challenge beast. I was better with the team challenges, probably being a firefighter or working together. I think I was a huge advantage when it comes to teams, but I don't think I'm too much of a huge threat when it comes to individual challenges, or especially the puzzles, I'm like really bad. So I don't think that I would be, I don't think people would go after me too much unless I was dumb.
Well, just to end off the interview here today, what's one piece of wisdom that you learned from being on Survivor?
When you shut the world off, your true passions and things that you're like truly passionate about and things that matter, they'll come to the surface on their own organically. So Because you only have your thoughts, you only have your, to go within out there when you're actually disconnected from civilization. So, if you did ever find yourself, feeling overwhelmed by the world, just like disconnect, go be by yourself, shut the phone off, shut everything off, go just listen, and, universe will talk to you and let you know what you should be doing.
Well, Danny, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much. This is awesome.
Of course. And until next time, this has been your host, Gabriel, saying keep on surviving.
Yeah, and all your fans out there, when season 50 pops up, they start seeing who they're going to choose. Make sure you throw my name out there if you want to see some fun shenanigans out in season 50. I will happily partake.